Portions of the following program will be recorded.
AM 570 KLAC, 98.7 KYSR, HD2.
Los Angeles.
Available anywhere using the iHeartRadio app. AM 570 LA Sports.
I want to hear it, man. I'm desperate to hear it.
This is the Petros and Money Show.
Best case scenario.
Mad Money Smith.
Worst case scenario.
Petros Papadakis.
What am I doing here? I'm humiliated.
Available on the iHeartRadio app.
Now online at am570lasports.com.
This is Petros and Money.
And with me, you see your father. Then you see me. Everything! Yeah! 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 Ah! Yeah!
Petros and Money, AM 570, LA Sports, live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app, your home of the NFL. The NFL playoffs, Super Bowl 56, will be heard right here from SoFi Stadium on your home of the National Football League, and that means this weekend we got all the games being played on the station.
Oh, every one, Matt. Like, almost every game. We have games tonight on the station.
How about
like,
that?
Just games coming all over the place.
Nonstop. UCLA at Utah gets it started tonight, an 8 p.m. tip. Pre-game at 7:30. David Vassay will have off-season Dodger talk for that little half-hour sliver there. Tomorrow, it's a super flex. Clippers at Sixers. So we're on 1-3. Pre-game 3, tip-off 4. And then Saturday, the doubleheader. Bengals, Titans, 49ers, Packers, Sunday. We got the game of the weekend, Bills, Chiefs, Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes, each threw 5 touchdowns in their wild card round,
so
and now they
touchdowns.
Will do battle. 10 combined, and one of those guys is going home at the end of that. You'll hear that right here on AM 570 this Sunday.
Is that as much of a shame as Justin Herbert not even getting a chance in these playoffs? We'll talk to Tom Telesco.
That's right.
In the very next segment.
He'll answer that question.
To discuss it all, and please podcast everything on the iHeartRadio app for your smartphone. 4 hours. Full hours of great sports talk. Padalarasa today for you waiting. But now it's time for the final hour fun fact.
It's fun in effect. It's the hour 3.
Fun facts. Fun facts.
Big horn sheep. Otherwise known as rams. It's your final hour fun fact. Did you know that the number of horn segments is the age of the bighorn ram? They get one new segment about every year of life.
Oh, that's why they have the gradient?
That could be it.
Like, because you know, you're a little, it's a little lighter, you know?
This is when we were young. This is like a Pop Warner era. Now you come up here. It's like a California sunset. The Fibonacci sequence gave us this gradient.
They have a beautiful display for the bighorn, the rams, at the Living Desert in beautiful Palm Desert. As you know, they have a side of the hill, and they're all there. And every once in a while, they do it.
They get after it.
Oh, yeah. They skip up and blah! And I think they run across the golf course, bighorn, the one that's right out there.
Beautiful course.
Yes. So,
30 pounds those horns weigh, more than the combined weight of the bones in their body.
That's why Chuck Knox retired to the desert.
So he could stay around.
Close to the Rams.
Be close to the Rams.
It's time for the quick hits! Come on, Kate, fire up that lighter. Light up your doobie.
The PMS quick hits. I'll make it quick, y'all. Oh, yeah!
Now, all you had to do was see the beginning of the Spectrum Sportsnet postgame show to know it was a bad night.
Worthy
was hunched over the desk like a man who was just broken in the stock market in the 1930s. The Lakers, 22-23 on the season. They lost last night to the lowly Pacers. They start a road trip tomorrow in Florida. LeBron James last night.
LeBron James.
Says... he's not into pointing the finger in public. You might get a leviction notice when you go into your locker.
Oh, I like that, leviction.
You might get the leviction when you go into your car and it's sitting on your front seat. You wonder how it got there, but not publicly pointing the finger.
Listen, I'm not in that business of pointing fingers or pointing blame or trying to put a quote at the end or at the start of somebody's someone's commentator of what they feel, you know, our coaching staff or Frank is or where Russ is or where I'm at or AD. If it's not positive for me, I'm cool. It's not It's not my lane. I'm not a negative person.
How do you feel about Kurt Rambis? How do you feel about that?
Archaic schemes.
Mm. Yeah, playing the guys I thought were going to win the game.
There's Frank. He sat Russell Westbrook for the final 4 minutes of the game after he was 5 of 17 from the field, 1 for 12 inside the arc.
Shots just were going in, man.
Yeah, playing the guys I thought were going to win the game.
Russ left the floor with 8 seconds left in the game. He left the locker room before his teammates. He did not talk to the media. I believe Russ was super stan.
Yeah, playing the guys I thought were going to win the game.
Well, I don't know. We don't know if that's true. Maybe he had to go to the bank. Maybe there was a board of trustees meeting at the bank.
10:30 at night. Game was played here in Los Angeles.
Different kind of bank. We've already learned that, Matt. They do banking a different way. They have their trustee meetings deep into the evening.
Once again.
And they serve big bottles of Mountain Dew.
You've made me a fool.
Instead of the carafe of water on the table.
Mountain Dew.
Big old 2 liters of Mountain Dew. It's banking done a different way.
He's super sad.
Yes, Cates.
After the game, LeBron was asked by Bill Oram about Russell Westbrook.
Have you followed Russ throughout his career?
Oh, I saw that show.
Okay. Have you followed Russ throughout this season?
Yeah, I believe I have.
Yeah. Now, would you think that would bother Russ not being in the late game?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Okay. Look at your answer.
Yeah, but what about the bank?
Okay. Look at your answer.
What did Bill ask? Is Russ pissed?
Like, I was curious if you had had a reaction to that. I don't think we've seen that in a close game this year. And how was Russ after the game? Is that the sort of thing that bothers him?
Yeah, why? Don't ask that.
Have you followed Russ throughout his career?
Just stop your question, Bill. Hey, were you surprised that he went out there? No, he was terrible. He takes stupid shots.
Have you followed Russ throughout his career?
At the most inopportune times, his guy was wide open for corner threes on back-to-back possessions. No. I was not surprised that he was not in the game.
Have you followed Russ throughout his career?
Well, there go your answer.
Yeah.
The Clippers are 2 games below 500. They're in Philly tomorrow. 4 o'clock tip. That puts us on a big super flex. We have some foosball talk throughout the day.
Foosball.
Rams are getting ready to play the Buccaneers on Sunday in Tampa. They're 3-point dogs on the road.
Buccaneers.
Things are going to change after Buccaneers. That Rams fun fact.
Buccaneers.
Great information about the Bighorn.
Buccaneers.
Bulls guard. He's going to have an arthroscopic surgery for his meniscus tear in his left knee. Lonzo Ball, our old friend. And then the next few days, he's going to miss 6 to 8 weeks to recover as your West Coast Chicago Bulls.
It's all coming undone for your Chicago Bulls.
Show of record.
They had the best record in the Eastern Conference, and now Levine's got a knee, and now Lonzo's got a knee.
But we can still pull it out, Matt.
Well, they got Caruso.
Better to have these injuries now than in the playoffs.
They got Alex Caruso out there doing his thing.
Randall Cobb has been activated, incorporated from injured reserve. Seven or so weeks after core muscle surgery. He'll play on Saturday. They were trying to make him the hardcore as opposed to softcore.
Softcore?
Yeah.
Well, you know what, though? Softcore's still effective. I'm just saying.
Not for some.
Well,
not for those that have been desensitized.
How desperate are you?
That's a good question.
So this is desperation time. It's the playoffs. It's win or go home. Softcore is going to work.
Man, she looks pretty good.
Right?
How long have you been in camp? I don't know, 3 days. Chiefs linebacker Willie Gay was arrested Wednesday night for misdemeanor criminal property damage. He's due to go in front of a judge this afternoon. Gay was in a disagreement with his son's mother, which promoted him to break her vacuum. Was it a Dyson? Not listed here.
Auric. Yeah.
Still a problem.
So, which is nice. She bought it from Costco.
Still a problem.
So, no questions asked.
Hey, at least, and Willie Gay said, hey, at least I'm not naked running through the streets of Florida attacking people with my dong out.
I mean, criminal property damage. You can't keep me out of a playoff game for that.
At least I wasn't sprinting across an open parking lot in Florida with my putzo out in front of a preschool.
Much worse. Willie Gay.
Never a surprise.
Is going to play.
Oh, let's go, Willie.
Willie Gay is going to play.
Look, you can pick up a hooker the night before the Super Bowl, pick up the Walter Payton Award, and freaking ball out.
You seen that Chiefs roster?
Eugene Robinson?
Willie Gay is going to play.
UCLA, Utah tonight. Utes have one win in the conference.
Utah!
Dead last in the Pac-12. Should have never fired Crisco.
Utah!
Mick Cronin does not want his team to overlook the Utes. It's hard to with the feathers.
I don't think they wear those during the game. I think it's just a uniform.
You haven't seen Swoop the Hawk.
In conference play, every game's a bloodbath. So if you don't come ready to play from the opening tip, you give another team confidence as Mike Tyson, Buster Douglas, man. It's hard to turn the tide sometimes. So we got to worry about us and our mission, what we're trying to accomplish, and our focus.
Bloodbath. Utah.
The Brigham Young Massacre.
In conference play, every game's a bloodbath.
Goner Party in the High Sierras.
I think we might be able to clip that with every game's a bloodbath.
They are.
And use it regularly in our fancy machine to go along with.
Well, you got a TV, buddy?
In our quest for historical memorabilia, somebody did suggest that we get into the Donner Party and try to pick up some of that. Here's the fork and knife they used to eat that thigh.
Every game's a bloodbath.
We are your cannibalistic High Sierras close. Show of record.
Not even close.
Day 50 of the lockout.
Lockout. There's a difference of opinion. Lockout. And no one's going to give it. Rich guys fighting over more money. What a load of crap. It's a lockout.
Lockout.
And we do have lockout news. The players and management and owners will meet in Manhattan. So they had their broad economic proposal that was roundly rejected. But meeting number two will take place. So a little bit of movement as we inch closer to when pitchers and catchers are supposed to report.
The Major League Baseball people spit this deal out like it was bad poutine.
This is a bummer. This was going to be great. People in Tampa don't give a damn about the Rays. It's the worst stadium in all of baseball.
Dick Vitale!
Their
How many
idea,
times do I have to say it?
Their idea was, listen, we won't abandon the market entirely, but let us split the season. Half the home games in Tampa, half the home games in Montreal. Everybody wins, except the players. They would have been miserable.
Yes, they would have lost.
The folks in the Major League Baseball front offices said, no, that is not going to happen.
Plus, no one wants to do business with Canada right now because they've been locked down since 97. They got locked down right after Montreal left.
Ever since the Expos left Canada.
Nobody's been in or out of Canada since
right?
then. It's hard. Jim Carrey can't go home.
Wasn't aware of that.
UCLA's top edge rusher, Mitchell Agudé, Matt, announced he's turning back the clock.
He is returning to play another season.
To play for the Bruins. If
the Bruins.
I could turn back time.
I mean, they got Charbonnet coming back. Now they got Agudé coming back. Man, Chip Kelly doing something special in Westwood / Pasadena.
I like this running back, Austin Jones from Stanford. USC's getting him. Now, there's a lot of guys transferring to USC to play running back. And some freshmen coming in like Ray Leek Brown. But I like Austin Jones. Pretty solid all-around back. Carried the ball 107 times for 378 yards and two tugs last year for Stanford. The Cardinal.
Ugh. Not the Cardinals. No S. The Stanford Cardinal. Their mascot is a color. Why? Because their last mascot was so insensitive, they were not allowed to have another anthropomorphic animal or human being.
Well, that's not what happened was the student body, the Stanford Indian, as I showed you many years ago when I discovered him, is shocking.
Every game's a bloodbath.
To say the least, yes. To see the Stanford Indian, and I suggest all of you look it up immediately. Anyway, Wilcox got a 4-year deal through 2027 at Cal because
he knew what he was doing.
Nobody wants to be at Oregon, it turns out. We will be back with Tom Telesco to talk about the Chargers and what happened at the end of the season and what's to come.
Chargers!
For the Bolts on PMS. We're going to be finished at 7. And then Brandon Gomes from Tampa, Let's Go Rays, is going to join David Messing.
Too many lonely souls have drifted out to sea. You lay your bets and then you pay the price.
Money on your smart speaker.
Mic check.
Just say, Alexa.
Yes.
Play AM 570 LA Sports on iHeartRadio.
Petros and Money, AM 570 LA Sports, your home, as it has been all season, of the NFL. And we are your home of the NFL playoffs. We are your home of Super Bowl 56. You'll hear it all right here from SoFi Stadium on your home of the National Football League. This weekend, we got all the games. Bengals at Titans on AM 570 Saturday. Flip it to our sister station because of UCLA basketball in the afternoon. 49ers Packers on AM 1150. Then Sunday, we got Bills, Chiefs, and tonight, a reminder, it's not just football, P. It's also your home of the Dodgers. We got off-season Dodger talk. David Vasse going from 7 to 7:30, leading into that UCLA Utah basketball tip-off at 8 p.m.
But joining us right now for our exit interview for the 2021 season, we've got to get on the phone with Electric Avenue.
Chargers!
Check in with your Los Angeles Chargers. One of our favorite guys to talk to because of his laconic style and deliberate delivery and track record of fabulous draft picks, including Justin Herbert. Disappointing end of the season, no doubt about it, but here to talk about what was and what will be, the great Tom Telesco on the Chevy Silverado Celebrity Hotline as we rock down to Electric Avenue. What's cracking, Tom? How are you?
Hey, thanks for having me on, as usual. Appreciate it.
We appreciate you, Tom. Now, take us through what the old exit interview thing is like. Do you talk to literally every single dude, like the backup long snapper? Like, hey, I saw you had a couple snaps. Thanks for the year. Like, what are you, every single guy?
Well, we don't do an official exit interview. I probably talk to maybe 30, 35 guys all on Monday. Brandon, I think at some point got to everybody within a couple days. A lot of these guys will be around in the off season, so I'll see them. But yeah, that last day, you know, I did speak to the team as a whole on Monday and then try to get some guys individually, but it's a tough day really to say anything. It's hard to look back on the season at that point, just with how it ended and every season ends abruptly, but you know, this one just stopped obviously. And it's a year that, I mean, for the whole year, we were essentially either, you know, in first place, tied for first place, or a game out of first place all the way till about week 15 with Kansas City, but still always in the playoff hunt. And then really at the last game, the last second, the last snap of the year is, you know, you're out. So it's a very abrupt ending to a season that we thought had a lot of promise, and there were a lot of expectations that come with that too. So have to, you know, remove yourself a little bit from the situation, get some perspective, look back on this past year and what worked well and what didn't, and just make a really good game plan for 2022, which is what we're starting to work on right now.
Do games in all the years you've been doing this, Tom, and I'm sure you've had great teams. Look, you've been on teams, worked with teams that have won Super Bowls. So you have teams that you think are good enough to not only get into the playoffs but make a run once they get there. Do you find yourself going back through the season and trying to figure out tipping points? Are you able to just compartmentalize it, put it behind you, and look forward to 2022? Or how often will you go back? Because you said it ended in such dramatic fashion in that game against the Raiders. How often do you revisit those games and moments?
You revisit them all as you go through it. It's such a long year, and you know, the first quarter of the season seems so long ago. And I don't know if there's ever a tipping point, but there's obviously different areas and different games that some improvement had to be made in order to get a win. You know, it shouldn't all come down to the last game of the year. But like you said, like I really feel like this was a really good football team that we don't get a chance to get in the playoffs to show people what we can do. And that's on us. That's on nobody else. You know, and I've been on teams. The best team I was ever on in Indianapolis, we lost in the first round of the playoffs, and the team that we won the Super Bowl with, if I had to rank all of our teams there, was maybe third or fourth best team. So that's just the way it works sometimes. But you have to get in the playoffs to have a chance to do that, and we just didn't do enough, whether it was in the last game or somewhere in between, of just doing just a little bit more to get this team over the hump, because we had a good team, and we really did. But just the way it ended, this makes it very, very difficult.
How important, and it was something that Brandon Staley talked about in his postseason, you know, kind of close of the season presser. How important was it to make sure that Justin Herbert did not take a step back? I don't know if that was ever in your thought process, if you ever expected that it was a possibility. But, I mean, not only did he take a step forward, but, man, there are conversations where he played like the best quarterback in the league for a stretch of time over the course of this season.
Well, we knew last year, as we're in the, you know, searching for the next head coach, you know, whoever that coach was, no matter what side of the ball they were going to be from, they had to have a plan for the offense and a plan for the quarterback. So, because we knew it was going to be different, whoever that was going to be. So obviously this year, when Brandon coming in and hiring Joe Lombardi as the offensive coordinator, new scheme, new system, and it really, really took off. And the whole group, every position group and the coaches did a tremendous job really building an offense that works for everybody here, including the quarterback. So I really wasn't worried so much in terms of a setback with Justin. I mean, we know he's talented and he has all the intangibles off the field that you need to be successful at that position. But also it could have been a little bit of a longer transition period with the offense. And really they came out, training camp, we had our ups and downs. You could see that. Wasn't surprised at all. Knew that would come. But, once the regular season hit, we had a lot of pre-snap penalties early in the year, which was normal for the amount of motions we do and the amount of new terminology. But, once we got moving pretty well, and we moved the ball at a higher rate, and we scored a lot of points. And I think we're just scratching the surface of where the offense can go with what Joe Lombardi can do with the offense with another year and another year of work and another year of experience for Justin. And we can't lose sight of the fact that he's still a young quarterback. He only has 2 years of experience in this league. So there's still a higher ceiling, which is really exciting. So, there's still a lot more we can do. But it was from the offensive standpoint, you have to be proud with what happened.
Tom Telesco is our guest. From a defensive standpoint, Tom, what can you do now to work towards avoiding some of the things that plagued the team this season? What can you do in February, in January, to kind of shore that up? What is that process like?
Yeah, January, February, they're big planning months, and you need to go back through the whole season defensively and just get a better feel for what worked, what didn't work, how the transition kind of manifested itself, and just make some plans for next year. And, I anticipated that transition being a little bit more seamless. But, like I said earlier, when I did a press conference earlier, I mean, I can't argue with the numbers. I mean, our points and points allowed and third down and red zone, which are really critical categories, we were in the bottom five in those categories, and that's hard, through the course of the year to be a legitimate playoff team with that. So we just need a little bit more. Now, we have higher expectations, and I think we're going to get there because I love the scheme and the system that we put in place, and I love how Brandon and Renardo Hill, how they teach this defense. So I think it will come with more learning and more repetition with these guys, and that we'll see that in the offseason and training camp. I think it will come with more player development with the players that we have. Obviously, in an offseason, there will be some addition and subtraction of players. So there'll probably be some new defensive players at some point, just like there probably will be some new ones on offense as well. So that's kind of where you look at it, and you start there. But there are some key pieces here that we need to keep building around, and we got to just get better at what we do. And, a lot of that we got to just work on this offseason as we get into OTAs and then training camp.
So much information is now available to fans because of the internet and because people make a living out of it. You go to SportTrack and they project how much money you have under the cap and how much is tied up in restricted free agents, but in guys in fifth-year options and potential franchise tags and all of that. In terms of your draft capital and your financial capital and who you have and who's up, Tom, like, are you set up? Do you feel like you're set up in a good position moving forward? You got enough guys, locked up moving forward at good numbers. In terms of trying to get that roster right, is it a good year or is it going to be a rough year in this offseason?
It should be good because we have a lot of flexibility between, if you estimate somewhere around 9 to 10 draft picks, I think we'll see in a month or so, 2 months or so. We have plenty of cap space and flexibility there. And we have a good core here. I mean, even players who didn't make the Pro Bowl. I mean, Austin Eckler led the league in scoring. He's not even in the Pro Bowls. So we have a good core of players here. And we can continue to add to that with the flexibility that we have both with cap space and the draft. Now, the draft's more long-term. But having a lot of cap space, it won't change our approach. I mean, that money would be budgeted a lot to the players of our own. That reward your own is priority number one. We have a good amount of, we had 6 Pro Bowlers, but 3 of those guys are on rookie contracts. So you do have to budget for that. And then we've been selective in free agency because you just can't build a team through free agency. You can certainly supplement it. You can certainly improve it in certain areas, and that's what we've done. Did that with Corey Linsley last year. But look, we'll have a lot of different avenues available to us that maybe in other years we didn't, just the way it's worked out. And we've been planning for this for a long time. And we've gotten to a point where we do have extra draft picks. We do have extra cap space. So this is, you know, this is intentional the last couple of years. So, yeah, this is going to help us out in this offseason. There's no doubt about that.
You've done some media today already, so obviously you've been asked about some of the more hot topics from when the season ended and throughout the season. Brandon Staley calls a very aggressive game. There's been a lot of argument about it, what's right and what's wrong. That last game drew a lot of criticism. Where do you come out on just how it all sort of played out and not to be a prisoner of the moment with just how it played out in that last and final game?
Yeah, you know, for these jobs, criticism is all part of it, and you know we're used to it, and you can handle it. So, and in the last game, I didn't quite understand what the big deal about the timeout at the end. That to me, that was much ado about nothing, and they had no effect in the game. Understand, you know, aggressive fourth down calls are hot topic issues, but you know we've been. If you watch us all year, you can see what our philosophy is and what our identity is and how we attack things. So that should not be new. It will not necessarily be successful every single time, but we think if you do it enough in certain circumstances, that's researched and well played out, that we'll be successful more times than not. Obviously, the fourth down call backed up against the Raiders did not work out in our favor. We did hold them to three after that play. But yeah, they got a lot of conversation. And what's funny is that same weekend, similar situation, that Arizona was playing Seattle in a big game. And in the first quarter of a tie game, Arizona was backed up at their 20 on a 4th-and-1. They went for it. They converted and continued on with their drive. I don't think anybody ever heard about that play. But in our play, we did not convert, you know, so it becomes a very big issue. So, but everything Brandon has done when it comes to 2-point conversions, when it comes to fourth down, they're all well thought out. Model has been put in place, but there's also some context to it too. He's not a robot making decisions based on what a spreadsheet would tell him. But you have to make quick, informed decisions during the game, and he does a tremendous job of that. And I like the identity that we play with, and I think everyone knows who we are at this point and how we do it. I understand everybody may agree with it, but we think it can lead to winning and get an extra edge.
Does it ever, Tom, get dangerous of almost becoming a self-fulfilling prophecy? Like you said, that's our identity, that's how we play, and then maybe you just go about it as, well, this is what we're supposed to do. Do you have a danger of that happening?
Only if you're making decisions just based on your gut. So, you know, we're still working off a lot of research and the models that are put together in these situations, which change game to game, that change play to play. So this is not just, hey, we're aggressive, we're going for it. There still has to be some research and data behind that give us the advantage. And if there's not, then, you know, it'll be a different decision. So I would only say that if it was the case, if it was just making blind decisions without having anything to back it up. But no, there's a lot of research behind this, and it helped us win some games this year that maybe, you know, don't go our way. But again, this is just how we're going to play, and you know, we're very comfortable with that.
Just one last thing on that. Is that like when Brandon gets hired, is that part of the interview? Is that part of his coaching philosophy? Like, as someone who, again, we keep saying it, you've done it at so many different stops where there's been so much success, it certainly seemed like this was a lot different. Well, it was exciting. It was a lot of fun to call these games, and I'm sure for fans to watch these games this year. But kind of how does that all come up? And is it something that you guys talk about and try to figure out what the right spot is for aggressiveness?
Well, I know one thing. I trust Brandon 100% with which goes into these decisions. So when, you know, things we talked about as far as game management and how we'd approach different situations and how you'd use it and how you're going to use analytics as far as game planning. Analytics is much more game planning than it is fourth down and 2-point conversions, but certainly that's part of it. But, you know, all this information we have, it just helps us make decisions and increase the probability of that decision being successful, and that's all we're looking for. We know it's not the end-all, be-all. But, yeah, those are things that come up in an interview when you talk about it. And, you know, I do want to play an aggressive amount of football, or play an aggressive mentality of football. I think, number one, you can win, and number two, it sells. And I think it's exciting football to watch. I mean, there's no way you can watch us this year and think that we were not an exciting football team. I mean, we throw the ball, we get the ball up in the air, we have playmakers on offense, we can get after the quarterback on defense. We've got Derwin James playing at all three levels of the defense, and we go attack things. Now, like you said before, everything has to be in reason, but I really didn't get a feeling that anything was reckless. People usually think it's reckless if you don't convert a certain situation. I know that last one backed up. It was a difficult call. A call he made, didn't quite get it. Maybe it would have been different if we converted and moved down and got points, but we'll never know.
Tom Telesco, our dear friend, talking to us again after the season's end. How do you handle the playoffs if you're not in there? Do you call guys and say, hey, way to go? Do you lay low? Do you dive into the draft? Do you do what I do and just hide in old movies of the past?
I've checked in with different guys who are in the playoffs and let them know I'm thinking about them. And, you know, I'd rather not watch the playoff games because it hurts not being there. But I do like to watch them just to see how games play out. You can get a really good feel for some of these teams in these high-pressure games. And you know it's a good team playing a good team. So I'll watch it with some business sense and seeing how other teams play. But, this is a big planning period for us as far as contracts are coming up that to expire, free agency. We've got college all-star games going on, the combine coming up, the draft. So always work to be done. So it keeps you busy. But it won't be leisure watching. We're watching these playoff games.
Well, you know, we appreciate it all season long. Appreciate it today, Tom. We wish you the best, and hopefully, you know, throughout the draft or free agency process, we'll be able to catch up before the season rolls around in 2022.
Well, I certainly thank you guys for having me on every week and giving us a chance to just talk about what went on. And you guys always treat me very well, and you guys are fun to come on and talk to. So I really appreciate that, and, you know, we'll stay in touch down the road.
Well, pro CDM, too. I mean, you know, you can't
forget
that.
About that.
You know, we cover all angles. The great Tom Telesco. Thank you, Tom. We'll talk
soon.
All right, thank you, Tom.
We'll be back with more PMS, your Dead and Alive Guy birthday of the day, as we continue on our last full show of the week. We will be on from 1 to 3 tomorrow. 1 to 3.
Protect your dream home with American Family Insurance. And you can weather any storm. You'll also save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote. Find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
The Petros and Money Show.
PMS.
Podcasted at AM570LASports.com.
Anyone with any sense has already left town and saying goodnight after a four-hour Petros and Money Show. Is us, PMS. You're going to have off-season Dodger talk with David Massey. He's got Brandon Gomes, the new GM of the Dodgers.
What a get.
In just a half-hour show. And then we got UCLA, Utah. Mick Cronin excited to play in front of those Ute fans. Tip off at 8 right here on AM 570. And Matt, that means tomorrow, big old flex alert as the Clippers travel to the city of brotherly love.
Flex. Alert.
Clipper Sixers means the Superflex will end before we are even scheduled to begin on a regular schedule. It'll be a 1-3 show. Adam Ozzel will come along at 3, tip off at 4.
Johnny Torrio is your dead guy birthday of the day. Torrio, a big mobster. He ran Chicago, Matt, the Chicago mob, right before Al Capone. You want to talk some Chicago mobsters? He would have
been
140 years old today.
This guy doesn't get his just due.
That's a Chicago way to give him his just due here.
Exactly right.
In Burbank. Although he has had his just due. He's been immortalized in hundreds of movies, stories. Johnny Torrio, born in southern Italy after his dad died in a railway accident. Emigrated to New York's Lower East Side.
And what did he do? Like so many others. He hit the streets like Vito Corleone. He was in all the gangs. All the best gangs. The 40 Thieves.
All the best gangs.
The Brooklyn Rippers.
Oh, the Rippers.
The Bowery Boys.
Is that right?
And then finally, the most powerful, where he met Al Capone. The Five Points Gang. He met Al Capone and hired him as a bartender. Bartender!
Spend a little time with me.
I'd like you to headbutt this guy until his face is crushed.
You got it.
Then they moved to Chicago because that's the Chicago way. And because Torrio's uncle had over 100 brothels to be run there.
Is that right?
And when you got an uncle that's got 100 brothels in Chicago,
man,
and you're toiling away at a bar in Brooklyn, time to pick up the steak. They arrived in Chicago, Capone and Torrio, in 1919, just in time for a prohibition. Now, the uncle of Torrio didn't want to have liquor in the brothels. He took a really heavy stance against it. You know, a lot like the Godfather took a heavy stance.
Gotta draw a line somewhere, okay? Yeah. You got all these brothels, but let's not get crazy.
Your business is a little dangerous. So they murdered him in his flower shop to get him out of the way.
Okay.
And Capone and Torrio, mostly Torrio, took over Italian organized crime in Chicago. They fought the Northside Gang, the freaking Mix, headed by Dean O'Banion.
I don't appreciate you saying Mix like that.
Yeah, well, I did it.
I don't appreciate it at all.
No, shoot you at your flower shop, too. It looks like Torrio got O'Banion murdered in his flower shop in 1924. And then Torrio got hit. Capone got hit and nothing happened. It was like a total muff punt. But Torrio got hit and they shot him right in front of his wife and it shook him up. He didn't kill him, but it shook him up.
Oh, really?
And he was never...
I can't do this anymore.
Never the same after that. He handed the reins to Capone. Capone was 26 years old. And Capone just started to blow up the city. You don't want to sell our liquor? Fine. And somebody would throw a bomb into their place of business and just blow it up. Hundreds of people died in attacks like that. Torrio just took it to Italy and said, I'm out.
Not a bad place to retire.
He quit. He went back to Italy. He did get pushed back because of Mussolini. Mussolini began to come back.
You know, I thought I could get out, but damn Mussolini. So
Mussolini's around here running around.
I got to get that
come around here talking. So then he had to come back, and then when he came back, we got him for taxes. But he died in a barber chair in Brooklyn of a heart attack at 75 years
old.
See?
Look at how you set that up.
Yeah, nobody cut his head off. Gene Hackman didn't beat his ass and then spin him in the chair.
Have his side part flapping in the wind.
A little bit of, you know, not Capone, but around the Capone world, you know. And then when after Torrio killed O'Banion, Capone fought with Bugs Moran, as you know, man.
At 5 points.
I was in all the best gangs. I started low.
The best.
And the Brooklyn Rippers.
Never liked the name. Gang was great. Was never crazy about the name.
Did you ever consider switching over, transferring to the Baseball Furies?
Thought about it. And then the Bowery Boys called. And, you know, I felt a lot better about that.
What about the Riffs? Riffs!
You're a live guy. We are your Kiss show of record.
We love Kiss.
We've talked to Gene. We've talked to Paul.
Never have talked to Ace, though.
Nor Peter. And we've done them all in your Alive Guy birthday of the day. Save Peter Criss, which is odd since Hard Luck Woman is my favorite Kiss song. Written by today's Alive Guy birthday of the day, but one of the few that Peter Criss did vocals for. Happy 70th to Stanley Burt Eisen. Starchild. Paul Stanley. Stud of studs. Quick note on this one. I know we've mentioned it before, but Paul wrote it for Rod Stewart. But he wrote it before Beth became the song that put him on the map commercially and on radio. And he was like, maybe we can use another one of these since the rock songs aren't really working, but Beth seems to have made us a lot of money and sold us a lot of records. So he flipped this to Criss again and had a lot of people ask, why ain't Peter Criss singing a lot more songs? And Gene's like, F you. Drummer singing songs, F you. he does have the best voice of all four of the members of KISS.
Well, that's subjective. I mean,
it is.
Poor Felder never got to sing. We never got to hear his voice.
And if you hear the lyrics here,
Paul Stanley. All Don Felder wanted to do was sing on one song.
That's all. Get out. He was totally inspired by Brandy. Rags, a sailor's only daughter, child of the water, too proud to be a queen. He says, oh, yeah, it was all because of Brandy. I love that song. So I wrote
Looking Glass is the best.
Whatever. All right, that's that. Now let's get to Paul.
So wait, whose birthday is it?
It's Paul Stanley's.
Oh, okay.
But he wrote Hard Luck Woman.
Oh, I get
wrote it for Rod Stewart. So hit it, Cates.
Paul's been on the show.
Paul's been on the show. Gene's been on the show. Took over the show, really. Didn't answer any of our questions and just started rambling.
Yeah.
Bill Walton style.
Paul's been on a couple times.
Paul was super cool. Born in the big town, Jewish parents, grandparents, fled Nazi Germany to Amsterdam, then to the U.S. Family into opera, classical music. Paul had a pretty bad, rough go of it as a child. He had this misshaped ear. He was deaf in his right ear. And said he was pretty much an outcast on the playground,
just
in the classroom.
Just for the one ear?
Just because of the one ear. Ended up having surgery on it, reconstructive surgery, when he was 30. But
well,
he loved
after
music.
That, the damage had already been done.
It had been. Family moved to Queens. He was into the Beatles, into the Stones, got a guitar at 13, played all day, every day.
But was he in the Orphans or any of the good gangs?
He was not. He was a man that turned the other cheek when violence presented itself. He joined a local band, Rainbow.
He's an artist.
Not that Rainbow. And then a pal told him about this guy, Gene Simmons, who started a band called Wicked Lester. So he joined Gene, they put out a record, and it flopped. Stanley and Simmons trying to figure out what was next. Rolling Stone classifieds. Peter Criss looking to play drums in a band. They audition him. Done. Ace Frehley answered an ad in the Village Voice. Stanley came up with the name. Ace Frehley, the iconic font. And they wore makeup from the start, but they had to tweak it. Had to hone their image. He was Star Child for a second. Then he was the Bandit. And then he was back to Star Child.
Yeah, the Bandit was short-lived.
Yeah, very short-lived. He said he had a full red face, too. That was one show, one and done.
Like a crazy samurai?
Yes, it was bad. So Casablanca Records called, signed him up, promoted the hell out of the first release. They were huge on TV. Everybody wanted him. Mike Douglas was first. But they weren't selling records. Casablanca getting nervous. Took until the third album, Dressed to Kill, March 1975, Rock and Roll All Night, to get charted and move some units. But the whole time, they were selling out live shows. And Paul, being the brains of the band, said, F it, man. Just do a live album. Maybe it'll sell as well as our concerts sell. And sure enough.
A lot of energy.
Casablanca was about to go bankrupt. And they were about to get dropped. And they put out KISS Alive. From Detroit, Cleveland, and Jersey shows, and it made KISS, and it saved the label. Bob Ezrin signs up, the longtime producer of Alice Cooper. That
makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, they released Destroyer, and that destroyed. Orchestra, choir, Beth was on that. Platinum, the next three releases, Rock and Roll Over, Love Gun, Alive 2, all platinum. In 1977, according to Gallup, most popular band in America. Toured the world, sold out 5 nights. At Japan's Budokan Hall, breaking the Beatles' 4 sold-out shows record. Put out 4 solo records. Not great. Early
80s. But the painting, Matt, the painting.
Yes. You can put those on your wall. Pick your favorite KISS member, put it on your wall. Early 80s were good, not great. Took off the makeup, put it on again. Reunion tours were huge. In 99, Stanley was the Phantom of the Opera. In the Toronto production of Phantom.
You'd love to see that.
I bet.
You thought Robert Guillaume was a stretch.
They own Rockin' Brews, and we've had them on to celebrate our appearances at Rockin' Brews in the past.
They love us.
Married twice, 3 kids, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2014. Happy 70th. Paul Stanley.
And a sweet vest.
Oh, gosh. The Riga Royal in New York City at the bar, 2 a.m. No shirt, vest. What are you ladies doing? Check out my hairy chest. Paul Stanley. We're coming back on
tomorrow. It's hard to, deny his...
He's a rock star, man.
...pheromonal appeal.
A lot of hair on that body. I'm going to show it off in a hotel bar.
It's a time that it was considered very sexy.
Right? Tomorrow. Well, during their peak. Maybe that's why they had the peak.
Everybody remembers Burt Reynolds on the Bear.
No doubt.
Burt on the Bear. Okay, tomorrow, 1 o'clock. It'll be a two-hour show. Don't complain. Enjoy it. And podcast coming up next. David Massey and Brandon Gomes. And then UCLA, Utah.